Hey everyone, welcome to another amazing episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host Chantel and I have my lovely bestie and guest host with me.
Hello.
That's my lovely Marie Rose. You guys know her. So, my lovely friend, how the heck are you?
I'm good. I'm surviving.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to share with our listeners? So let me preface whatever's going on right now by saying that I'm looking at my little friend in a cast with her leg propped up on a peg leg. I don't know what this thing is called.
It's a knee crutch.
A knee crutch. Okay. So we are recording on an off day because my poor little bird was injured the other night when she was coming over to record. And it's not funny. It's funny now because you're okay. And it's not actually funny. It's just the freakiest accident.
I've never had a broken bone in my life. And so we decided we were going to talk about poltergeists. And I'd done some research because I am not familiar with poltergeists at all. I didn't even watch the entire movie Poltergeist.
You didn't?
Scary movies give me nightmares.
Oh, right, right.
So I watch bits and pieces here and there, but never the entire movie. And so I really had to research the subject before we talked about it, and I left the notes behind. And on my way to meet Chantel, I went back to retrieve my notes and ended up breaking my fibula. Nice, clean break. And I made my way to Chantel's house. We sat and watched my ankle swell and made the call to go to the ER. And they were fabulous, and they took x-rays and they said, yep, it's a clean break. Yeah. I'm like, you're kidding. I was really, really hoping they'd say it was just a sprain.
I know.
And
but a break is such a great story.
I know. And so, but yeah, so I'm reviewing the notes for the poltergeist today and I'm thinking to myself, if I get into an accident on the way to Chantel's house, I am taking these notes and I am burning them.
And scrapping the hell out of this.
You're going to have to find another co-host for this episode.
Hell yeah. I agree. And then I'm telling her, I think we're in the ER. And I go, oh, you know what? When I was researching, I found that poltergeist can bite, scratch, pinch, trip. She like whips her head around. It looks at me and I was like, oh God.
So I wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary. So I am. So I was tripped. That's the story. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes your feet, they just give out. They're done.
My ankle rolled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I was skipping or doing anything stupid. My mm-hmm. ankle rolled and I went down and that's all she wrote.
Yes. So my poor friend is, I didn't see you yesterday. No, I didn't. This happened Monday night.
Right.
We're going to record. And so I didn't see you yesterday, but I was happy to see you today up and about with your little knee crutch.
With my peg leg.
Mm-hmm. It's a fancy gadget. God willing, I don't, but if I ever hurt my ankle, then I know I don't have to suffer with those stupid crutches.
I used the crutches for 24 hours. It sucked. Mm-hmm. I started getting a blister on my hand. And my very good friend, Tony, loaned me his knee crutch. And it has been wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I can tell people who have had leg injuries and have used crutches in the past. They look at it and go, oh my God, that's so cool. Yeah, whereas everyone else looks at me and goes, oh my God, what happened?
Yes. The veterans understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I feel like crutches are of the devil. They are good for inflicting violence on others. And that's it. That's it. That is their duty here.
Yeah. Crutches do make good weapons. You can whack somebody with those.
That and good for collecting dust in an attic. Right?
Right.
What a spooky thing to find. You're like, oh. Look at that. And her crutches, so tiny. I mean, like Christmas ornaments, you guys. Very small, these crutches. So anyway, enough about that. I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you, my dear.
I'm happy that I got to spend some time with you on Monday In spite, despite your accident, we got to hang out.
It's always an adventure with mm-hmm. us.
It is. We always end the night with, that was crazy. And it was.
Yes, it was. And if we're doing this episode and something in this room falls over, knee crutch or not,
no,
I'm asking elbows out of here.
I already thought of that. So in this room, I have a Himalayan salt lamp and it has a dial on it where you can turn the light up or down. And it's really bright. So, I mean, it stays on all the time. And my husband will come and turn it down because it is so bright. And the room that it sits in is right across from our master bedroom. And so he'll turn it down, not a ton, but then he's told me a few times, he's like, did you turn the lamp up? I'm like, no, I didn't do it. And he just kind of gives me a look and goes on along his way. And so I caught on quickly that what he's thinking is, oh crap, one of your people doesn't appreciate me turning that lamp down. So they turn it back up. So who knows? Who knows? That's what poltergeists also do. They increase your electrical bill. Oh, but yes. So before we get started, I do want to give some shout outs to all of our family and friends who are always so supportive of us.
Woohoo!
Oh yeah, Marie and I can't walk through the halls at work without our friends stopping us to tell us how cool an episode was or ask questions about some of the content that we covered. So it's really exciting. I'm glad that it's so well received. I specifically want to say an incredible thank you to Marie, because Marie is a ride or die friend. Like, Marie gets in, doesn't ask questions, just says, okay, what can I do? How can I help? And so I cannot even like say thank you enough, because this podcast is so much more fun because you're in it.
Oh, it's because I love you, baby girl.
I love you. I also want to say we have a new listener on Blog Talk Radio. A new follower that goes by the name of Eye for Beauty. So to you, Eye for Beauty, thank you so, so much for following us, for supporting us. I cannot tell you how much it means to me that you're listening in and following so that you can get updates on when new episodes launch and all that good stuff. And you really mean the world to me, and I'm sure to Marie, because Marie puts in a lot of hard work too. So thank you, thank you, thank you from my entire heart.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, and like I said, our family and friends, to my husband and my mom who follow me on Facebook and Twitter and like every single thing that I post.
Isn't that a mom's job to like everything you post?
And apparently a husband's job too. It's so super sweet. Like I have like, you know, 30 notifications and I go in and 21 are because they're liking my pictures.
That's so sweet.
It's super sweet. So thank you, Mom and Sean. You guys are amazing and never cease to amaze me. So with that, we're going to get underway. I just want to remind you guys, if you ever want to reach me, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Medium Matters. You can email me. What's my email address? TheMediumMatters@gmail.com. I'm so captivated by Marie's boot.
She said by her boot. Her peg leg. B-O-O-T.
Right. Right. That's what I said. So you guys, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. I would love, love, love to hear your amazing ghost stories. So send those my way. Marie and I definitely want to do some episodes where we share those stories. And many, many Q&A episodes also where we answer your questions, and we will also learn some stuff because we're all students forever.
That's the truth.
Yep. So we're going to get down to our incredible content, and tonight we're talking poltergeist.
Scary.
So seriously, it's so popular, poltergeist, because of the movie.
Yes.
And I think whenever anyone thinks of poltergeist, they think they're here. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and the little blonde girl. Yeah, Carol Ann. Static TV.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's scary stuff.
That like super 80s neighborhood they lived in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super creepy. Yeah. So what is a poltergeist? Literally means, I think in German it is, noisy ghost. That's what it is. And are they always noisy? Nope. But they do move stuff. I think poltergeists are typically associated with like objects moving and levitation of furniture and
physical movement.
Mm-hmm.
Physical like tripping movement. People. Bastages.
Yep. Tripping people. Poltergeists, you can find, I mean, it's been included in so much stuff. Stories, I mean, dating way back. Stories and movies and TV shows. I mean, you name it. It's kind of... That was Marie whimpering. So you guys might hear some whimpering, and that's my dogs outside of the room. They don't appreciate being locked out.
And they're so sweet.
They are sweet, but they'll be in here rolling around and squeaking toys, and I'll get nothing done. So they're going to have to wait their turn. So poltergeist is included in a lot of different things. And I think typically, I mean, I haven't been able to find a story that is solely poltergeist. It's typically wrapped up with ghosts and hauntings also. There's usually another element mixed in there. But in folklore and parapsychology, a poltergeist, it's a type of ghost or other supernatural entity that's responsible for a physical disturbance, like the noises we talked about. It could be objects being moved or destroyed. The pinching, the biting, the hitting people. The tripping friends. Amongst other things. And then most accounts include the levitation of objects and noises like knocking sounds throughout a space. So I can't think of a time when I've heard knocking when no one was around.
How about with your grandmother and the...
Well, I was just thinking that. And that's, I guess I think knocking more like, you know, a fist on a wall or a fist on a door or...
You don't count your dresser?
Well, it's not really, it's like... The handle is being knocked. Don't freak me out. So I have talked about the scary stuff from, you know, when I was younger. And remember I said there was, I think I said that I told this story. There was, you know, I used to wear that necklace and take it off when I would shower and put it on this like teddy bear that was on my bureau. And one day I come out and it's gone. The, not the bureau, just everything was left, but the bureau was gone.
That'd be a cool trick.
What a strong ghost. So the necklace was gone, and I didn't find it for, I think, a couple weeks. I mean, it was a while. And I found it one day underneath my bed, sitting on top of the box, like laid on top of the box where the Ouija board was. I mean... There are so many curse words running through my mind right now that I don't want to say on the air, but it was so creepy.
So does that count as a poltergeist?
I would say yes. No one was there to move that. Why would anyone be like, oh, I'm going to play this funny joke? There's nothing funny about that. Like, my necklace is gone. And now it's under the bed where the freaking Ouija board is. But in putting this episode together... I was trying to think of, I mean, there was so much activity in that house. There really was. And there's been activity, I guess, all throughout my life when I think back. And, you know, when this, in doing the research and they're talking about touching and all kinds of stuff, you know, I talked about my grandma seeing those hand bruises on the back of my legs. Is that a poltergeist? I don't know. Is it crazy? Hell yes. Why? Do I have bruises on the back of my legs in the shape of large man hands?
Right.
So I do remember this one time, and this is right around when everything just kind of hit the fan. And my mom had been out, I guess, at my aunt's house or something. I mean, I don't remember all the details of the story, but I remember, you know, she had used her driver's license and her bank card somewhere. I know. So the light just like full on flickered.
Yeah. Did the light just blink or was that my imagination?
Oh no, it full on blinked. Da, 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 da. So anyways, my mom had used her driver's license and her bank card. And then she's that same day, a little bit later, she's at my aunt's house and is looking for it again for whatever reason and can't find it. And comes home and is looking, you know, she looks through her car, looks through everything, comes into my room and is like tearing the closet apart because she shared the closet with me and is thinking maybe somehow it ended up in another pair of pants or whatever the case. And she's going through everything. I guess I came home around that time and I come in, you know, upstairs into the room and ask her what she's doing. And she tells me what happened. She can't find her license and this bank card. And so I start helping her look through, you know, her bag and these clothes and whatever. And I get down on the floor. I sit on the floor so I can kind of go through this stuff with her. And something catches my eye from under the bed. And underneath the bed is the driver's license and the card.
Was it laid neatly across a Ouija board?
It was in close enough proximity. I mean, there's no reason why it should have been under the bed.
Seriously, it was by the Ouija board?
I'm not kidding. Yes, that's true. So then is when my mom found out that there was a Ouija board under the bed, and that didn't go over very well.
Did she beat you with a Ouija board?
No, but possibly because she was in utter shock that I've been sleeping with a Ouija board under my bed. And I'm like, I didn't know what to do with it. I'm sure there were a million things I could have done with it versus sleeping with the freaking thing under my bed. But that aside, so just crazy stuff like that used to happen. So, you know, doing the research for this episode, I just kind of started thinking about all kinds of things that have occurred over the years. And I'm like, man, what the... You know, and everything is kind of intertwined. Like I said, like I couldn't find one story that was solely poltergeist. They all have these intertwining elements of a ghost and a haunting and a poltergeist and a, like, you name it.
Yeah.
But I did find during the course of my research that, you know, there is a theory that typically when there's a poltergeist in a home, there's usually a teenager, which is interesting. So the theory... Marie just did another head whip to look at me. So yeah, there is typically a teenager in the home.
Just meddling kids.
I know. And the theory is that these teenagers, because of stress, anxiety, trauma, whatever it is, just maybe even being a teenager with hormones everywhere, they are able to telekinetically move things and they may not even know it. So I don't know that I had any kind of telekinetic abilities.
It was you.
It was me. I bruised my own legs. So, I mean, it's an interesting theory for sure.
It's a good theory.
It is. It's like the movie Carrie. I mean, that's what she had. She was able to telekinetically beat the tar out of everybody at the prom.
That's another movie I didn't go see.
What?
Scary movies. Oh, scary movies. Nightmares, not happening.
I need new friends. This is not right. So there is another theory that poltergeists are, okay, there's the one of, you know, it could be a teenager, just, you know, they do or don't know, whatever. And there's another theory. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of theories. One of the other ones is that it's a demonic entity. So the one thing that keeps, I think, a lot of researchers from really clinging on to that one is that they've tried doing exorcisms and it doesn't work. So that's why they think it's not demonic. So, I mean, I don't know. Is it a quote unquote normal spirit? I really don't know.
Yeah. Is it a spirit that's trapped here? It didn't go to the other side? Or is it a spirit on the other side who's able to come over, you know, reach over here and knock something over to get your attention?
Right. And I mean, that's also true for one of your loved ones. I mean, they have different ways of being able to communicate with you. So where do you draw the line, you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. We need a specialist in here.
So if anybody has the answers to that,
I know.
Email.
Because we want to know.
So many questions.
I know. I mean, I researched and researched. I read so much different material. And I think ended up with more questions in the end than I had to start with.
Yeah, when you start researching this stuff, you find out how much you don't know.
Yeah. Oh my God, I felt really dumb. I don't know. I mean, I think, like I said, they intertwine so much. Ghost and haunting and poltergeist and the list goes on and on. I mean,
maybe it's just something that can't be categorized.
I think so. I really do. There's so many different levels of spirit all around, you know, the light beings and the ones that are really low and everything in between. So I really don't know. I mean, in doing the research, they can do things, you know, like I said, touch people and make knocking sounds and make things move. They can also, you can have electrical disturbances like we just had.
Like lamps blinking on and off for no reason.
And she says it's as she stares at the lamp.
Yeah, I'm seeing if it does any more tricks.
Yes. So they could turn on and off. There could be knocking or banging on the walls or wherever. I mean, I've heard stuff when I've been home alone, like for no apparent reason. You know, there'll be like a plate in the kitchen with a fork on it, and I'll hear the fork kind of move across the plate.
By itself?
Well, yeah, because I'm the only one that's home. I don't know how else that fork would move. I didn't see it. I heard it, though. You know what a distinct sound that is? I mean...
I've heard strange noises in my house, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm laying there going, what the crap was that? But I usually figure it out probably within 24 to 48 hours. Okay, such and such fell in the middle of the night. And but no, I don't have forks magically moving across plates.
I did hear that once. It was after my grandma had left. I don't remember how long it had been, but I did.
You think it was her?
Well, I don't know why she'd be messing with dishes in the afterlife.
She was telling you to wash them.
I know. Like, what have I told you? I mean, I don't know. I like I said, I've experienced things like since long before she left and things since she's been gone. So,
well, that's the way you roll.
I roll deep with the spirit world. And I do really believe, because I've seen it, that there are spirits everywhere. And so they don't necessarily have to know who I am, and I don't have to know who they are. And they just mosey on through here, and maybe, you know, in passing, they're like, oh, look, a fork. I mean, I don't know, but I see them everywhere. They're all over the place.
Is there anybody in this room?
I'm going to say no, because I feel like that would make you feel better. No, there isn't anyone, I promise.
Scout's honor. I believe you.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. It's an exciting topic for sure. There's so much, like I said, that I don't know, and that I just ended up with way more questions. But I did find some cool stories that I want to share. I think you have some too, Marie. So I don't even know why I'm going to bother asking you this, but did you watch The Conjuring or The Conjuring 2?
I might have watched The Conjuring with you.
What? I don't remember that.
Didn't we, like, watch that at a office party?
Oh, you're right. We did. Yeah, those are our office parties. We watch scary movies.
Well, because Chantel puts them together.
I do. And I'm like, haha, this is what you're watching.
And we eat and watch the scary movie. And
we eat our body weight in horrible junk food that tastes so good.
Pizza and...
pie and donuts and soda and
right nachos. So you lure me in with food and then put a scary movie up.
I do. I'm like, no, you can't run. I weighed you down with food. That's just the kind of friend I am. You're welcome. So I bring that up because in The Conjuring, they introduce Ed and Lorraine Warren. Ed is a demonologist, and Lorraine can communicate with spirit and all that good stuff. And she can help move people along, including demons.
Okay.
So they're typically called in when something nasty is going on. So they're introduced in the first movie. In the second movie, and in that first one, sorry, I'm going to back up. They help this family called the Perrin family, who is being tormented by something very evil in their home. And it's a family, mother, father, I think five kids, five daughters. And in any event, so they go on to The Conjuring 2. And this one takes place in Enfield in England. And this is another family. It's a single mother with, I think, four kids. And I'll cover all that. And in the movie, the Warrens go there to help them because they have, you know, something nasty going on in the house, possibly some sort of possession and poltergeist and haunting and ghosts and you name it. So I liked them. I thought the first one was better, but...
Isn't that always the case? The first one's always better than the second movie?
Usually, yeah. But I mean, they were both good. They had this creepy demon nun in there that I didn't care for. I know. So in The Conjuring 2, you know, they have the Warrens again and they're there to help the family. So this is the story of this family in Enfield, and it's called the Enfield Poltergeist. And I read a lot of different articles that people have written about, you know, what transpired. And I got the majority of my content from an article from the Daily Mail written by Zoe Brennan in May of 2015. So the story takes place in 1977, and the mom, which is Peggy Hodgson, is a single mom to four kids, and it's Margaret, who's age 12, Janet 11, Johnny 10, and Billy 7. And I guess like the first in the movie, the way it all begins is Janet, who is the 11-year-old, she's the second oldest, she and her friend make this Ouija board and she plays it. She plays with it at home. It's a big no-no. Don't we know? So she plays with it and that's what kicks off the event.
Of course.
Of course. So in the story, it just kind of picks up on the evening of August 30th, 1977. And the mom, Peggy, hears Janet complaining from upstairs that her and her brother's beds were wobbling. So she goes up to check, I guess, and, you know, nothing's going on. They can't get it to happen again while she's in there. And that's kind of the end of the first night. The following evening, Peggy, the mom, hears a crash from upstairs. And when she goes in there, the kids have a bank of drawers, like a chest of drawers in their room. And the kids are saying that this chest of drawers has moved. It's been moving. And when she comes in there, it had stopped moving. And so as she's on her way out, the chest of drawers starts to move. And she gets to witness it. So she pushes it back and it moves out. And she pushes it back and it moves out.
At what point do you run?
I think on the first night I would have run. I'm like, your bed is wobbling. Get your stuff. Let's go. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have waited for the next night.
Yeah, what? Yeah, after you push it back and it came back out again? Oh, heck no.
Right, right. So this happened a few times and then it comes back out and she went to push it back and then she couldn't move it anymore. It was just like ultra heavy and they couldn't see anybody. It's just the three of them in this room. So what the heck was pushing a heavy oak chest? Nobody knows.
Poltergeist.
So Janet's sister, I mean, this is an interview that was done and they were able to talk to them then during the, you know, during the time of the events and afterward. And Janet's sister, Margaret, who's the oldest one, was saying that there were these strange noises in the house, these little noises. You couldn't really tell where they were coming from. It's like they were coming from inside the walls. They were coming from outside. They were coming from the ceiling. It was just kind of everywhere. And it was so creepy. And none of them could sleep because it was just constant activity. So the family ends up appealing to the neighbors. They had these neighbors named Vic and Peggy Nottingham. And they had run over there for some help. And I think this also takes place in the movie. And so they go over there and Vic, the husband, the neighbor, says that he'll go over to the house to check things out. So when he's there, he also hears the noises and hears the knocking on the wall, in the bedrooms, on the ceiling, and he can't identify what is going on. He's the only one in the house. So they end up calling the police, and the police come over to check things out. And while they're there, there is a policewoman named Carolyn Heaps, who in her time there ends up seeing a chair move like 4 feet. And so she checks it for wires and is looking all around it to see how this could have transpired and sees nothing. So she, I think she really was like, yeah, I gotta go. My boss is calling.
Yeah, out of there.
Mm-hmm. So she says a large armchair moved unassisted 4 feet across the floor. So she inspects it, like I said, and couldn't find an explanation. So eventually they leave and they tell the family that, hey, we're cops. We can't handle this for you. Sorry. And so I think it's the mom, Peggy Hodgson, who ends up contacting the press. And the Daily Mirror sends a photographer, Graham Morris, who visits the house. And he says that it was constant chaos. Things started flying around. People are screaming, like it's madness in the house. Because, I mean, if they're not sleeping and all this stuff is going on, like, I don't even I can't even imagine what their emotional and mental state is like. It's got to be crazy. So some of the events were captured on a camera, and everybody that witnessed it said, you know, whether in pictures or in person, it was so disturbing. And one, I guess there's a picture that shows Janet being thrown across the room. And there's a famous picture. I mean, in everything that I read, there's a very famous one of her in the air. And you can't tell from the picture if it's levitation, assisted or unassisted. You know what I mean? Like, you can't tell if she was jumping or if she was like being pulled up into the air.
So you don't know if it's just looking at it, whether right. it's legit.
Just looking at it. So I don't know if that's the picture that they're referring to, where she, you know, appears to be thrown across the room. But apparently in other pictures, it looks like her face is like super distorted from pain, which, you know, if you've got a possession going on and they're doing some stuff to you, I'd imagine that'd be painful. I don't know.
I hope I never find out.
Me too. You know, during the course of all this activity, they had a lot of different people come in and press and whatnot. And I guess the BBC also made it over to the house to check things out. And the crew was supposed to film and record, but they found the metal components in their tape equipment had been twisted and the recordings erased. So makes doing your job a little hard when you have ghosts messing with your equipment, which we don't know anything about that, and hopefully we never will. So after that, I guess, or during that, the family sought the help from what they call the Society for Psychical Research, SPR. So from SPR, a couple of investigators came over, Maurice Gross and Guy Lyon Playfair. And Gross says that as soon as he got there, he realized the case was real because the family was in such a bad state. He says everything was in chaos. So, you know, he's definitely not the first to say that. That seems to be a common theme. So what the chaos is, you know, I don't know. And like I said, I mean, is it stemming from everybody just being sleep deprived and, you know, just kind of hearing this stuff all the time and having to learn to live with it? I mean, I don't know.
And again, at what point do you get the heck out?
Right, exactly. And, you know, I guess one of the elements, I mean, I watch different ghost hunting shows and all that stuff. And one of the elements I know is that some people just say, there's no way I can afford to leave. I mean, I don't have the money.
Do they not have friends?
I know. But you know what? I think you have to have a really ride or die friend like I do in you. Otherwise, I think anyone else would be like, you and your ghost need to go somewhere else. So they did have the neighbor friends, Vic and Peggy, that they went to. And, you know, and in the movie, they go there a couple of times at least. And I don't know, you know, in the true story, the real story, how much they relied on their friends. But I mean, it was like a circus show. There were people in and out of that house to record events and, you know, try to witness something firsthand. And so in any event, you know, so Maurice Gross and Guy Lyon Playfair are there to do some investigating and see what's going on. And so Maurice says that, you know, they got there and he knew that things were really bad and it was legitimate because family is in chaos. And so he says initially nothing happened. It's, you know, just pretty quiet. And then Lego pieces start flying across the room and marbles. And he said, what's really strange, and I guess it's pretty typical in a poltergeist, is that everything that was being thrown or, you know, moved by this unseen force was hot to the touch when they would pick it up. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I never knew that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if I had touched that fork and I could have found out for myself. So I don't know. So he does have another account of him standing in the kitchen, and he says there was a T-shirt that leapt off the table and flew to the other side of the room while he was standing by it. Creepy when your laundry starts to move on its own.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm like, you know, if you can move on your own, why don't you move yourself to the washer and dryer?
So you're going to be a poltergeist. At least be a useful
right,
one.
Right. Save me some work. I mean, you know, be a little helpful.
Wash the dishes at least instead of just moving the fork.
I never thought of that. Dang. Help out a little. I mean, so the investigators, I mean, there were so many of them. So they say they found themselves caught in a lot of psychic activity with a lot of tricks, the poltergeist tricks being thrown at them. Sofas levitating and furniture spinning around and being flung across the room. The family being hurled out of their beds at night. So Maurice says that one day He and a visiting neighbor found one of the kids shouting that they couldn't move. I don't know which child it was, but saying that they couldn't move and it's holding my leg. And so they go over there, and their account is that they had to wrestle the kid from whatever was gripping the kid. I mean, there was a very tangible force there. So, I mean, I would have packed up all my equipment right there and said, nice to meet you, but...
Yeah, I'm gone.
My mom is calling.
Gone like a freight train, gone like yesterday.
I gotta go. So everybody says that the knocking that they constantly heard was probably one of the most chilling things. And it would run down the walls, fading in and out, like it was playing with them. Just toying with them. I mean, and I've read that before and heard other people say that. They work off of our energy. And if it's a low energy like that, which, you know, it sounds like it was, then why wouldn't it feed off of that fear? And if it creeps you out that it's, you know, making these noises and stuff, then it's going to do more of that.
Gives me the shivers.
Mm-hmm. So the activity, the way a poltergeist usually works is that it's not following a location. Or, you know what I mean? The activity doesn't surround a location. It's typically a person. So the person in this case was Janet, the 11-year-old that, you know, I said at the beginning in the movie, she and her friend created that Ouija board and she was playing with it. And that's where, you know, things kicked off. So according to her, she doesn't know why it got started, but it does seem like it was based around her. So she would go into violent trances and she didn't ever recall being in those trances. On one occasion, I guess the iron fireplace in her bedroom was wrenched from the wall. Nobody was around. I mean, like, she was by herself, and how could an 11-year-old, unless she's part human, part Hulk, pull that fireplace from the wall?
Yeah, that's scary.
Mm-hmm. So family and investigators claim to have seen her levitating and, you know, floating clear across the room.
And she has no memory of levitating?
I think she does have some memory of levitation, because I want to say in one of the quotes I read where she talked about one of the scary parts about that is you don't know where you're going to land.
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that.
No, I know. I know. So in the interview process, she says, you know, they did speak with her, and she said that she felt used by a force that nobody understands. And, you know, she obviously doesn't like to think too much about it. It's a really scary time. And it really was like a circus, like a zoo in there. I mean, people just wanted to come and see what they could capture on film, you know, camera or video, and, you know, kind of to hell with everything else. So she says, I'm not sure the poltergeist was truly evil. It was almost as if it wanted to be a part of our family, which is crazy to me.
Mischievous.
Well, if it's not, I mean, I guess so, but why would it do these things to her, you know?
Attention?
I guess.
Like a little mischievous child?
I guess. I mean, early on, they were able to determine, based on communication with the spirit, you know, the entity, that it was a man named Bill Wilkins. He had died there in the home, in the living room. I guess when they moved in, there was like a recliner in the corner in the living room. And that's where he died.
And the recliner was still there? They didn't get rid of it?
The recliner was still there. I mean, they didn't know that when they moved into the house. But, you know, if that's what he is reporting, then why do you still have it in the house?
Note to self. Any furniture left behind, get rid of it.
Yes. Burn it to the ground. Mm-hmm. So she says it didn't want to hurt us. It had died there and wanted to be at rest. The only way it could communicate was through me and my sister. Still crazy. Still very crazy. So there is a lot of doubt about this story. I mean, it really does go on. There's some other stuff that happened. It went on for, I think, 2 years, from 77 to 79. And there are a lot of people that doubt what actually transpired. And Janet even admitted at one point, and I want to say it's when she's, you know, grown and off on her own, that some of the things that took place were staged. And she says it was her and I think her sister, they would play tricks on the investigators to see if they could get caught, if they would get caught, and they always did. So she says of everything that happened, probably 2% was staged. Do we know that for sure? No, there's no way to know that. I mean, just kind of weird. So there's a lot of speculation that it's really just teenage antics and, you know, teenage shenanigans, and they're just trying to get attention. And
I guess as a teenager, I just didn't have that kind of imagination.
Me either. I mean, I wasn't doing anything, you know, malicious like that, or nothing that would make my parents crazy.
Yeah, or drive the family crazy, or have the cops called in. And
right. So she does admit that she did play with a Ouija board with her sister before everything had started up, but she says she can't say for certain that that's what got everything going. In my mind, I'm saying you played with a Ouija board, you woke this thing up or conjured it back, or, you know, whatever the case. I mean, who really knows? But I guess Bill Wilkins' son confirmed what happened to his dad in that home. So that was legitimate. There was a person that did live there, Bill Wilkins, and that is how he died, an aneurysm or something like that. So, I mean, that part is true. But I don't think the family knew anything about that when they moved in. That was all information that came up during the course of the haunting and the occasional possession.
So I wonder if anybody ever asked him, why didn't you move the recliner out of the house?
Right.
Why'd you leave your dad's recliner behind?
Right. It didn't fit on the moving truck. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy to me. I mean, it's an intriguing story for sure, whether it's true or not. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there are a lot of stories like this. So she says, I mean, like I said, that she knew when the voices were happening, and she says that it felt like somebody was behind her all the time. And the investigators did all kinds of tests, including one where they put water in her mouth to see if they could get the, you know, Bill Wilkins to talk, if they could get Bill Wilkins to come through when she had water in her mouth, and it wasn't her. It was just a test to see if it was like legitimate. And apparently she was able to still, or Bill Wilkins was still able to talk through her with her having this water in her mouth.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, isn't that weird too?
I mean, what did he sound like? Gurgling noises? I mean, I'm trying to imagine how in the heck would that work?
Right. And if he could have talked with her mouth full of water, then why did he even need her? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, he's still using her voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's got, yeah, that I can't visualize that being.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, apparently the activity slowed down a lot, really, really ceased when a priest came to the house, you know, for no good reason. It just kind of stopped. And the mom continued to live there until she passed away in 2003 or something like that. And I mean, it's just kind of crazy because Janet's younger brother, Johnny, had died of cancer when he was 14, and they lived there at the house. Their mom developed breast cancer. She died in 2003. Janet, who is perfect timing. You guys hear that thunder?
Okay, that was scary.
That was scary. We're sitting here talking about Bill Wilkins. So Janet lost a son when he was 18. He passed away in his sleep. And I mean, it's a lot of loss, it seems like. Like, maybe there was still something going on. And the mom stayed in that house. It was a rental when they moved in. I don't know if they ever bought it or what, but I would have hightailed it out of there.
Yeah, I would have gotten out of there a long time ago.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So she stayed in the house, and she said it always felt like somebody was there. The activity had died down a lot, but she still heard noises in the house. She said it always felt like somebody was watching her. That is unsettling as hell. Sorry.
Yeah. Out of there. Gone. Yeah,
no, not even a little bit. So, you know, don't go meddling with Ouija boards if you feel like you've been tripped by a poltergeist.
Right.
Run or crawl. I mean, I don't know. So there was another family that moved into the house when the mom, Peggy, passed away, because she was the last one there at the home. And it was a mom and her four sons that moved in. And the mom says that she didn't see anything, but she felt really uncomfortable. And there was definitely a presence in the house because she always felt like somebody was watching her. And her boys would wake up at night and say that they heard people talking downstairs. And yeah, that's all I need. Really all I need. So she ended up finding out what the history of the house was. And then she felt like, oh, okay, all of this makes sense. And I guess the last straw for them, because, you know, she was probably willing to see if she could live through it or if it would die down or something. But I guess like one of her sons woke up and said that a man came into the room, and he goes running into his mom's room and he's like, "Mom, we have to move." And so they did. They left the next day, which,
yes,
I applaud that. Yes. Get the hell out. Yeah. Don't stay. So now it's occupied by another family, and, you know, they don't want to be identified because obviously they live there, but everybody's got the address. This is all over the internet. So I wonder how much activity they get out there with people driving by, and I mean, which has no relevance. But, you know, for the mom, she says that she has kids and they don't know anything about it and she doesn't want to scare them. And that's just going to be that. So I'm like, well, good for you. And maybe, you know, we've talked about this before. If you don't know about it, you don't believe, you don't give it attention, is it still there? Do you know what I mean? If you're living right. in constant sunshine and you don't have anything going on, like, are you going to be affected? Where Peggy and her family, Janet, all of them, they were, you know, single mom. They were strapped for money. I mean, the dad wasn't in the picture anymore, obviously. So they were probably going through it.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think this through.
Do you know what I mean by that? Like, yeah. You know, they feed off of your energy. So if you're in a vulnerable state, then you really are kind of opening the door where you're like, I'm not fully grounded. I'm not protected. I'm not as aware as I would normally be.
Yeah. And if you're sensitive to spirit, and yeah, so you are, you know, you're a source of energy. You attract it.
Right.
And if you don't know how to protect yourself, I guess I can see that happening versus somebody who's not open. And so said poltergeist is poking you, nothing happens. Like, well, you're no fun, and walks away.
Boring.
Leaves you alone.
Right.
Right. So whereas, okay, I'm going to poke this person. Oh, they saw me. I'm going to poke more.
Right. No, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. It's intriguing, all of it. And, you know, even when we get to the other side, we may not get all the answers. I think it depends on your light level, or, you know what I mean? Are you going to end up as an earthbound, or are you going to move over, you know, cross into the light? And
I don't know. I think when we get to the other side, we get all the answers and we look back and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't see that.
That's where Hoffa is. What a bunch of dummies. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we won't know till we get there.
Right. Which will hopefully not be for a long time.
Yes, hopefully. We need to make sure we remember how to walk and how to not trip over our dogs. And oh, yeah. It's the good stuff.
Yep.
So that was my first story, is the Enfield poltergeist. And I was excited when I came across it in my research because I had seen the movie and I wanted to see how close they were, you know, reality to a Hollywood script. And in reality, the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine, weren't really there the whole time like they were in the movie. They went and, you know, saved the day. But in real life, it was something like, you know, less than a day they were there. And that's even true for The Conjuring, where I was reading about how they went, and instead of spending all that time and, you know, saving the day again, they really were there to do like a seance, and that was it. The family like booted them or something like that.
They booted them?
I guess so. The dad and, you know, the father and the parent family was like, yeah, no, that's it. This crap ends now.
Get out.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a juicy story for us?
It involves, it's an article I found by Gary Harkey. And it's about a house in Florida back in 1962. And a family lived there, an older couple named the Daughtrys and their 12-year-old great-grandson. And, you know, here we go again with the kids. And so on a Friday in September, this said when the ghost first made their presence known to them by the covers flying off the bed.
Oh, not okay.
And then a vase flew off the mantle.
My silence is fear.
And then a chair fell over with the grandfather in it.
Oh, that's rude.
I know, right? And then a bottle of pesticide hit the grandma in the head.
Sorry. <That's> not-
So now you got some angry grandparents who called the police.
That's
So the police brought their, I'm sure, adorable police dogs, and the dogs wouldn't go in the house. They stood outside and whimpered.
And you know what? I am a believer that you need to pay attention to an animal.
Right. And a police dog is trained. And if they're like, if they sit down and go, no, I'm not going in, you're gonna, I'm going to listen to that police dog.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So.
You know what I would do? I'd be like, I have just the person for you. I'm calling in our rookie. Sucker.
Yeah, the dogs stood outside and whined until finally one of the police officers picked one of the dogs up and went inside.
Oh, that's cold.
I know, right? He said he didn't see anything, but something hit him on the leg. And grandmother said, yeah, if you stay around here long enough, you're going to get hit by something. So the neighbor started to gather outside. And so that was a Friday. Saturday, a reporter, Joseph Phillips, got assigned to the story. And of course, he doesn't believe in poltergeists or ghosts or anything like that. But he said he walked in, got goose pimples, and saw household objects flying around and crashed into bits on the floor. Cups, vases, tobacco cans. And he said he didn't believe any of it until that day.
When he saw it.
When he saw it. By Sunday, because the story's out now, they've got thousands of people wanting to see this haunted house. Everybody wanted to go in there and see things flying around. And
is that not crazy to you?
I know. Well, it's like, I don't believe it. I got to see it with my own eyes.
I know. But listen, I got to say, if my neighbor or someone on my street had some crazy crap going on like that, do you think that I would call you and be like, hey, do you want to see some cups fly? No.
Yeah. So on Monday, they moved. They're like, screw this. They packed up their grandson and left.
So when did this start? Like, how long had that been going on?
The weekend. It started on a Friday and they moved out that Monday.
Was it Friday the 13th?
No, it was like the 7th or something like that.
Damn it. There's nothing significant about Friday the 7th.
No, it's not.
That's crazy. So it's like, does it explain why that, what happened? What started it?
Well, William Roll, a psychologist and parapsychologist from Duke University, came and he said that he got there that Tuesday and a china closet door shattered. He wasn't convinced it was a ghost.
What did he think it was?
He investigated for about a week and...
And this is after the family was gone?
After the family's gone and everything came back negative. He couldn't find anything. So...
So when you say everything came back negative, you mean he's looking for... Like electrical issues and maybe water currents under the house and like that kind of thing?
Anything physical, anything paranormal. His theory is that somebody, either the grandparents or the 12-year-old boy, could have had psychokinesis.
Right. Which is the telekinesis.
Right.
They're one and the same.
He says there's no evidence or deception or fraud, and the people who moved in the house afterwards had no experiences. Again, this was what, 1962. They said, you know, the house is gone now. It's been torn down over the years. His theory and the theory of the neighbors are when the family left, the ghosts left, or when they. It's just, that was it.
That's crazy. How odd that it happened for a weekend. It's another story that's, we've now talked about two stories. The second that has teenager in the house.
Right. And they did what I would have done. We got the heck out. It's like, why do you stay? Like, okay, agreed. This is nuts. This is agreed. Nuts. So here's the question, though. Did they leave because stuff was flying around? Or did they leave because all these people showed up to the house and wanted to come in and see flying things?
Well, word spread fast. And there was no Twitter or Facebook then. So how the heck did that word get out?
Right. You know, articles, word of mouth, but telephones.
I mean, it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
It's like, how fast could that have gotten out?
Yeah. And it could have been exaggerated. I mean, the article said 10,000 people, but it could have been, you know, it could.
So
it
was, in 1960, whatever, that was like the state of Florida.
Right.
You know, all in their house.
Retirement community. Everyone's bored and everybody knows each other. And
I am not bored enough to go watch crap fly around someone's house with no explanation. That's crazy.
No, no.
What a creepy, creepy story.
Yeah.
That's just, it's so, I mean, at least in the Enfield story, there's the possibility that it was playing with a Ouija board.
Right.
In this story, what the H set off like a weekend of chaos like that?
He couldn't find any evidence of any paranormal activity. But again, then again, the family had gone.
Does it say anything about the family after they left that location?
No.
So I wonder if, you know, wherever they went, they took the grandson with them, right?
Yes.
So I wonder if, you know, wherever they ended up going, if they experienced more things like this. And
no, there's no follow up with the family that was displaced. They said the people who moved into the house afterwards, the strange occurrences had ended, and it's just an empty lot now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Here's what I say. Don't have teenagers. They're nothing but trouble. That's what I say. That is creepy and a half. I did not care for that story. Well, I mean, we have more to talk about on this poltergeist topic, but we're at the end of our recording time. Our episode is over.
Oh,
I know. So, you know what that means? Part two. That's exciting. I like a part two.
Well, you know, how do we make the part two as good as the part one?
You're going to have to break your other leg. We need for some good storytelling. So,
if I break my other leg, I'm going to be so mad at you.
No, I will put you in a hamster wheel to make sure that doesn't happen. You're not breaking anything else on my watch.
No, 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 no.
Mm-mm. All right, friends. Well, with that, we are going to end part one of Poltergeists. And we're going to pick this up with a part two and make it even more fun and bring some other cool stories that we already have lined up for you. And like I said before, if you want to get a hold of me, find me on Twitter, Facebook, at Medium Matters. You can email me at themediummatters@gmail.com. Skywrite, Carrier Pigeon, Smoke Signal, whatever it is. You can find me. And don't forget, I definitely want to hear your awesome ghost stories. Marie and I want to do some really cool episodes about ghost stories and Q&As. And we've already gotten some good questions. So we want to put a really good episode together for you guys. And don't forget that coming up in August, we have some really cool content. We are going to be ghost hunting with the Ghost Brothers at Pensacola Paracon. I'm so excited, and I gotta make sure that my little friend here is gonna be mobile. So I can bring her with me. Otherwise, you're gonna be listening to my fright with everyone else.
I should be good by then.
If I have to put you on my back in like a baby backpack, I will do that. I will do it. I am not above it. We're going to find one for you to crawl into.
It'll be good.
So in addition to that, we are also going to collaborate with another really cool podcaster and name to be released soon.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. But very exciting. So we have some really cool things coming up in August. And if there's a topic you guys want to hear about, make sure you let me know. Marie and I would love to hear your ideas. With that, you guys, we super duper Starship Trooper love you. Thank you for listening and supporting and just being with us and being so fantastic. Thank you for all the follows on Twitter and Facebook and all the positive reviews and all the love that you send our way. And I can't tell you enough how much it means to both Marie and I, because we really do put in a lot of time and effort into making this listen worthy and follow worthy.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And like worthy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So we love you guys. And as always, we're sending out love and light to one and all. Good night, my friends.
Good night.